All right, here we are live. Jimmy Dean the Wolf, episode number 67. Can you believe it, Jimmy?
What? For real?
Yeah, for real.
67?
Yeah. We started this last year. I think January, I think we started. I got to move this so that I can see you.
That's hard to believe.
Well,
67. No.
We haven't done it every week, but
pretty close.
I mean, if we'd done it every week, we'd probably have another 20, maybe. Wasn't there a time when we didn't do it because we couldn't get together, and then we figured out we're just going to do it live?
Right.
There's exactly. Probably a month or two where we didn't do it at all.
Well, when we started, I remember sitting in your studio and filming like 8 of them.
Yeah. And then I had to edit them because
I ain't figured out what a pain in the butt that was.
Took me 6 hours per episode to edit them.
Right.
Because I would edit out all the uhs, and now I'll just leave it in. Just do it live, and it's done. And I recorded the audio using, our professional mics, like this mic. And the audio and the video was never synced. They would get off. I think the video was slower. Or whichever one was slower, and every minute I had to edit it and bring them back on track. And that, when you're doing a 45-minute video, that takes a long time.
Sure.
So that was a big drain. So now we're doing it live, and here we are. So
hit the easy button.
Hit the easy button. I like that. We're gonna have to start interviewing people. Start playing at the venues. We're going to have a couple of venues.
Yes, we are.
And it's going to be a Jimmy D and the Wolf venue in Madison, Indiana.
Yeah, so, man.
I can't wait. And we're going to be, hopefully we can interview the people who come through and want to play those gigs and elevate their exposure, elevate our exposure. So exciting things going forward. And yeah, this is Monday night. For those of you who are tuning in, I see that we got some people watching. Thank you. We're going to be doing this on a Monday night from now on. Tuesday's had a conflict. COVID things have opened up, and finally you got your Tuesday gig back again. Oh,
gigs are all of a sudden, dude. It's like every day I'm getting calls. Every day. I looked at it the other day and looked at July. I only had one day off between Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. And somebody called me about it, and I was like, I might want to keep that Saturday because, it's summertime with the kids and stuff. And we have some traveling coming up. So summer's booked. It's already booked
up. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you got on your calendar when we're going to the Ukraine, right? So
absolutely.
So you can't book during that,
right.
The second week in August or second half of August and the first half of September,
yep.
We're going to be gone in travel touring Europe.
Yeah.
And Poland and Ukraine. Poland's still iffy, but I'm pretty sure that we're going to have some Polish gigs in Warsaw as well. So it's going to be exciting stuff. And we'll be doing our podcast. I think we can probably do our podcast from there.
Sure.
So I think they have Wi-Fi and whatnot. We'll bring our iPhones and whatnot. So
it might be on at 3:40 a.m. in America, but do it.
Yeah, we've got Alex, a good friend. Alex is now living in Warsaw.
He's the best, man.
He is awesome. And he's going to try to book us there. He sent me the card for Hard Rock Cafe Warsaw. So the person managing it, and he met her or got her card. And he said no promises, but that's at the level he's starting at. That would be awesome to play the Hard Rock Cafe.
We've got an in with Alex because remember we wrote him the song.
We did. We wrote him a song for his wife called Kanyu. And you can hear that on I've got it on my YouTube channel, and it's actually, I think, a pretty good song, don't you think?
too, man. And I live for that kind of stuff. I mean, to help somebody create a memory like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you want us to write a song for you, commercial, we do that. We have a custom song business that we will write a song for you and record it. And Jimmy will even do a tutorial video how you can learn to play it for your loved one on the guitar. The whole works. You get the professionally recorded recording of it, and you can even have the carry. We take the vocals off, so you have a karaoke version. You can just sing along to it without vocals. So,
yeah. Unless, of course, it's a rap battle song, then we insist that it's one of us doing it.
So I recorded a song and put it up today. It's called I Can't Help Myself. And I'd already recorded the chorus, but the verses I had to re-record, or I had not re-record. There hadn't been any verses. I hadn't written them. Yesterday I wrote them and recorded the guitar. I think I recorded the guitar late Saturday. But the noteworthiness of it is it's the first recording I've done with my 58 Bassman amp. So for guitar players, I mean, a Bassman is probably the holy grail of a vintage Bassman of amps.
In my mind, it's the holy grail of amplifiers.
You know, and so I purchased this on Reverb. What a story that's been. And they go for, well, I guess I can say what I paid for it, I suppose, but they go for over 10 grand. I've seen them advertised for 10, 15 grand, and I've found one for 5 grand on Reverb. And we were actually going to go look at it. It was in South Carolina. We were thinking about making a road trip. It's a 10-hour drive one way, but we decided not to, and I ended up buying it. It's a big risk in a way, although Reverb is a really reputable site. It's reverb.com for guitar gear. They have reviews and different things. And the guy that sold it to me must have been an old hippie, because he kept in the text back and forth, he kept talking about Mercury retrograde. Mercury's in retrograde. That's why he couldn't get it shipped out. He said, they didn't pick it up. Mercury's in retrograde. And then he said it again about something else that kind of went wrong. So it's kind of funny.
Retrograde. That's where it looks. Mercury looks like it's going the other direction, right?
I have no idea what that is. I'm not into that at all.
It's an optical illusion. It's like if you're on the interstate and you're going faster than the car in front of you, it looks like the car in front of you is going backwards. And it's the same kind of thing. Mercury is closer to the sun, so it usually spins at a certain velocity, and Earth actually spins faster, so it makes Mercury look like it's going this way.
That's what it is? That's what that means?
Yeah.
You need a telescope, and you need to know what you're doing to see that, I guess. Right.
Like an optical illusion.
Huh. I did not know that. Thank you for educating me.
There are people that think it actually, that the entire planet is doing this and just stops and goes. That happens. Yeah. Pretty wild stuff.
Could that be the same subset of people who think that a new president is going to be sworn in August?
Probably.
that was a cheap shot. Anyway, so let's go back to guitar amps. Stay off politics. My apologies for offending anyone on that one. But so I got this amp, and it came in, and he packed it really well. I mean, very well packed. He had taken the tubes out, of course, and I plugged it in, and it went for about 30 seconds, and it stopped. And I'm like, oh, did I blow something up? Because some of the key things about this amp that you can't really get are the transformers, for one, the vintage transformers from the 50s, the speakers. They're vintage Jensen speakers. They've been recombed, but the magnets and the drivers are all the same, the old stuff. I don't know what else. The circuit board. It's hand wired. I mean, it's not printed circuit board. It's hand wired stuff with resistors and transistors and discrete items. And I thought I blew something up. I was scared to death that I did something wrong. And it didn't come back on. And I emailed the Mercury Retro guy that sold me, told it to me. And I said, I'm taking it to the amp company. They're going to look at it. And so I took it to Nashville Amplifier. And I think I might have told some of this story last week. Did I tell the story last week? No? Okay. So I took it there. And they're so busy, but it is the place to go. They're so busy that they said, well, we can get to it in 12 weeks. That's 3 months. But they're the place to go. So I took it there. And I told them what the issue was. And I said, could you at least look at it and make sure that I didn't get a copy or that the circuitry is actually the right circuitry, that I actually is what it was advertised? Because I was nervous. Spent $5,000. I thought it was a fake. There's something for that kind of money. There, somebody could go to the trouble of fake. There's fake everything. And he was supposed to look at it and give me an email back, but he never did. So I'm sitting there. I tried not to think about it. 3 months later, to their word, they got into it. And the guy calls me and he goes, yeah, we're looking at this basement here. The reason it's been cutting out is that there's the quarter inch plug that goes to the speaker jack. It's faulty solder on that. I'm like a 50 cent problem. I didn't blow anything up. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. I did not blow anything up. But he said, that is a few things that we'd replace, some resistors, some things, you know, the key things that are vintage that make it what it is, we're all fine. But he said, I want some capacitors, you know, capacitors wear out, you have to update those. And so they about $250 on it. And which is not a lot of money for working on an amp. Would you agree? I mean, for a vintage amp, somebody that knows what they're doing. And when I went to pick it up, they just raved about it. And they said, that's one of the best examples of a vintage basement. Not only is it a true 50s basement, he said it's one of the best examples he's seen of a vintage 50s basement. He said, that's a sweet amp, man. That's a sweet amp. And like a month later, I took another amp there, a solid state Yamaha amp for my studio. And the guy said, oh, you're the guy that brought in that basement. How's that basement treating you? That's a phenomenal example of a basement amp. 1 month later, the guy still remembered the amp. So I finally used it to record with, and there's something about it. You can hear the tracks. It's the rhythm track, the verse tracks on I Can't Help Myself. And I recorded them. And there is something there about those tracks versus the tracks that are on the chorus, which was recorded. I think those were recorded a couple years ago. So anybody want to listen to that song and hear that, to me, there's something about it. I can't quite categorize it, but I'm so excited. I'm going to have to learn how to use it. I mean, it's a tool that I think how to set it. And I just put everything at 5, you know, I'll put all the controls at 5 because I need to do a little research and see what are the best settings, you know?
Well, I know what Buddy Guy does with his basements. He turns everything all the way up and the bass all the way down.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Seriously, we played the Indy Blues Festival and he was there and I was talking to his guitar tech and I was asking questions about Buddy's settings. I said, how does he set his basements? And the guy's like, you're not going to believe it, but he takes his hand and just dimes everything and then he turns the bass all the way down.
Volume too? I mean, that's loud.
Oh, dude, when I do it, it sounds like baked trash, but it sounds great when Buddy Guy does it.
It was loud. I had everything on 5. I had the volume on 5. That's loud. And I was afraid it was going to wake my – I think my roommate was sleeping. He had been out late the night before. And I asked him. He said he didn't wake up. So that was good. But he's on the other side of the house. But I'm really looking forward to, to working with it. And pretty excited. Yeah. And, well, it's all – I mean, it was built as – designed as a bass amp. That's why it's called a basement. A guitar player's got a hold of it and realized that it made a great guitar amp. Yeah, that had reverb in it, which most guitar amps have reverb.
But it sounds like it does. It sounds like it has reverb because the Pine cabinet, to me, when I hear basement, it's like, yeah, that sounds right. when I hear the Blackface amps with no reverb, it's like, that needs reverb.
Well, you can help me figure out how to utilize this tool that I have then.
Great amp.
You know, and the other amp I got around the same time was Fender Twin Reverb from the late 60s. It's a silver face, not a black face. Wasn't going to spend the money for a black face. But the silver face, they switched over to the silver face, I think, in 65 or 66, and they changed the circuitry somewhat.
Yeah.
But what you want to stay away from, according to the research that I found, was you want to stay away from a master volume. In the late, early 70s, they went to a master volume, and they just kept increasing the wattage. I think mine's about an 80 watt, and I think they went all the way up to 180 watt in the early 70s, just kept pumping the volume. Those are the ones you don't want.
You ever seen a quad?
Quad.
A quad or Super 6?
No.
You don't see them very often, dude. They're really, really rare amplifiers. The Fender Quad was the 412 rendition of a Fender Twin.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And they were the same kind of deal. Like the ratings were all funky in like the mid 70s. There were some of those, even some of the twins that they said were 100 watts were really like 160 watts. They were stupid loud. And the quads were notorious for that. And so was the Fender Super 6. And the Fender Super 6 was a Fender.
You cut out. Please say that again. I don't know if you're in the room. Fender Super 6 was
a Fender Super Reverb with 6 10-inch speakers.
Oh boy. Wow.
And it's the same kind of deal. Like that era, for whatever reason, like that era of Fender amps, they're notorious for the RMS ratings being wrong, the wattage ratings being wrong. Those amps were almost always louder than what they were rated for being.
Yeah, I mean, with a master volume, I had a Fender Twin with a master volume control that I got used in the early 80s, so it must have been of that era, and that thing was so loud. It even had the push-pull. You could pull on the volume control to get extra, you know, I was young, and I always wanted everything loud, so I always had the pull tab out. I think you overdrive it. I don't know what it did exactly, but I always would try to, you know, louder is better. And distorted is better, overdriven. And that thing was heavy, though. This one's heavy, too. The bass one's a lot lighter than the twin. So, yeah, you should tell your story about how the last twin you had.
Well, my friend Donnie, he's a pretty smart guy. He's an old Vietnam vet. He had asked me to buy, I believe it was a 74 Silverface twin. Same deal that we're talking about. It was like 165 watts. It was really, really heavy. And I used it every night. I was playing like 5-6 nights a week. And I would lug that big, heavy amplifier around. And he asked me a handful of times if I'd sell it to him. I was like, it's not for sale. It sounds so good. And he showed up to a gig. And as I'm getting out of the truck to load in my twin.
Where was the gig?
Right.
In the building.
I want to say it was Rising Sun or Cincinnati.
Oh, I mean, didn't you tell me it was the second floor?
No. It wasn't.
Oh, okay.
No. But he was in the parking lot when I pulled up. So he'd like thought this through. And I get out, grab my guitar, and I'm getting ready to grab my big heavy Fender Twin. And he's like, hey, use this tonight. And he rolls out this little Fender Vibralux that's on wheels. I'm like, yeah, I'll use it. And I did the entire gig on it. I was like, it doesn't sound as good as a twin, but it's also on wheels. And it's not very heavy. And so at the end of the night, it was like, even up, you know, I'll trade you the twin for the Vibralux.
Wait until you were tired, exhausted from a 4-hour gig, probably.
Exactly. But the funny part about it, the last laugh kind of thing is now when I see him, I'm like, you still got that twin? He says, yeah. And I'm like, does it ever leave the house? He says, no. So he has it. But
well, you know, my twin is probably not going to leave the studio. I mean,
sure.
And my basement certainly isn't. I'm not going to go touring with even though I paid five, worth, I've seen them in reverb for $13,000, $14,000, $15,000.
Right.
I'm not going to go touring with that. Not taking it to the Ukraine for sure.
Yeah, a couple thousand dollars in handling.
So I'm excited about that. You know, the.
Well, that basement, that those were the basically the blueprint for the early Marshalls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It flew out the back of a truck in a head-on collision. It still works.
What? Your Marshall?
No, my basement.
Your basement?
Flew out the back of the truck in a head-on collision.
And your big accident, that was in the back?
Yep.
What your basement is that?
I want to say it's like a 2002 reissue.
Okay.
It looks older than dirt. And every person that sees it says, man, where'd you get a 59 basement? Because it just gigs. I just used it so much. But I just assumed all my equipment was trashed. And my buddy went back to the crash site and got it all. And I hadn't even made it out of the hospital yet. And he comes over and he's like, all your gear's working. I'm like, there's no way, dude.
That's a friend, man. That's a friend.
Yeah.
That's an awesome friend.
I still use one of the speakers. It was funny because I just painted a house. And the bed of my truck had all the extra paint cans in it. And after the accident, it painted the road, dude. You couldn't see where the yellow line was, anything like that. It painted the road. And the accident happened at night, and it was raining. And so when my friend picks me up from the hospital, I was trying so hard to kind of recollect what had happened during the accident. You know, was it my fault? Was it their fault? Was it no fault? What exactly transpired? And I had my friend take me back, and I'm like, it was somewhere around 55 and 316 Junction in Kentucky, but I don't know exactly where it was, but maybe it'll jog my memory when we get closer to. And we're driving down the road in a van, and I just got out of the hospital after being in there for like 5 days or whatever. And we come up and the road's painted. I'm like, that's it. It's like I painted the house, you know, and then suddenly I remembered all the paint cans and stuff. I'm like, that's exactly where it happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sure, the basement flew out the bed of the truck, and my friend found it in a ditch, and he had to screw the back panel back in, and it needed new power tubes and new output tubes, and it worked.
Wow, I didn't know that. How about your guitar? Where was your guitar or guitars?
Well, this is a funny thing about it. The guitar that I had done that show with was actually given to me by a local venue owner named Jeff Vaughn at my 27th birthday party the night before the accident.
Wow.
It was a American Standard Fender Telecaster, and it was natural. I get it to the show the night of the accident, and the bridge pickup quit. And anybody that plays Fender Telecasters, if you don't have a bridge.
Yeah, you got to have that bridge pickup.
That's the whole thing, man. I mean, a Telecaster with no bridge pickup is pretty much useless. And it just didn't work. The whole gig, I'm going, what is going on? This is a brand new guitar. So I gave it to my friend Nick Sassenis, who's a luthier. He went to Roberto Venn's School of Luthier, and he was the bass player on the gig. And I give it to him. I'm like, man, take it home with you and see what's going on with it. And he takes it home. The accident happens, the whole bit. And he comes to see me in the hospital afterwards. And after we had talked about the wreck and stuff, he was like, man, you ain't going to believe this, but I got that guitar home and the bridge pickup worked fine.
Wow.
Almost like the guitar. It was almost like the guitar knew the wreck was going to happen or something. The guitar not getting in that truck.
Wow. You still have that, Telly?
It was stolen at a show. I was loading in at a show in Columbus, and the load-in was such that there was no parking close to the venue. So you had to pull up in this alley and unload your vehicle, and then you went and parked, and then you loaded everything in at once. So I pulled up, unloaded the truck, went and parked. The first load that I took in, I grabbed my guitar amp and the PA head and walked in. And when I walked back out, I saw a dude on a scooter about a half a block away with my Telecaster. And I had like a moment of clarity because I looked at him and I looked at my truck and I'm like, I can catch this guy pretty easy. And then that little voice, little angel on my shoulder or devil, whatever you want to call it, maybe both, was like, if you catch this dude, you're going to prison, Jimmy. You know, the little voice in my head, it's like, you're either going to drive this guy over, you're going to get mad enough that you're just going to drive over him. Or if you catch him, you're going to beat him to death. Don't pursue this guy. And I just watched him kind of disappear on the scooter with my Telecaster. They even had it on camera. There was a camera in the back of the venue, and the local police department showed up, and they're like, well, chances are you won't get it back. And I'm like, well, if you would look at, you know, everybody within a mile radius that drives a red scooter and has DUIs, you'll probably find my guitar, because it's not like this dude went to Kansas on a scooter with a Telecaster in his right hand. But it's, haven't seen it since, man.
I'm convinced that, I mean, was it the sheriff? What branch of the
local cop, city cop?
Yeah, well, I had, which I heard through the grapevine, two ex-disgruntled employees break into a plant. And the security, we had to correct the security, but we had to build a shed in the back for our fan. We had this big 12,000 RPM fan. whatever the measurement is for the airflow. It wasn't 12. And if you crawled on top of that, you could slide open the glass window and crawl in the top. If you worked, people that worked there knew that because they used to open that window when it got hot because we didn't have air conditioning in there. And so people that worked there knew that that's how you could get in the building. And it was a small town. And one day, as I came in, my partner was there earlier, my partner at the time, and he said, we've been robbed. And they took one, like a drill, and they got into an office and threw papers everywhere and stole one of my hard drives that I had laying on I was replacing the hard drive in my laptop, and that was the hard drive with all my stuff. And I lost about 6 months worth of data on my hard drive. And we knew who it was because they were bragging about it, you know, in the neighborhood. From the next town over, that's where they were. And we had the cops come, the deputy sheriff came. And, you know, what kind of a person is a deputy sheriff? I mean, you're not elected, you're appointed, whereas the sheriff is elected. And this guy was like moving slow and, you know, kind of overweight and, you know, not super motivated guy. And we told him, I said, I'm pretty sure I know who it is. And he was like, let me write out the report. All he was doing was writing out a report so he could put it in a file, and nothing was ever done. I mean, so,
yeah.
I mean, we didn't lose a lot. Nobody was injured. No, but they broke in. You know, you're violated. Somebody breaks into your property, it feels like a violation.
Right. Yeah. I just felt like they didn't care, man.
Yeah, they don't. I mean,
from my process of elimination, look at everybody you've given a DUI, like within five block. How far is this dude going to go? Driving a scooter with one hand and holding a Telecaster in the other hand. It's not like this dude's going the other side of the country. You know, he knows he can make it home safely on a scooter, probably without being seen by a lot of people.
Well, where was this wasn't in your hometown. Today, I wonder if a guy couldn't even figure it out, you know, with Facebook and everything, you know, put a post up. Hey, I lost this Telecaster. It's a red scooter.
That, man.
What's that?
I did all that. And the venue owner did it too. I had people looking for it because there was such a sentimental value to the guitar. Because it was a gift, you know? The venue owner gave it to me because we packed the house over and over and over. It was a birthday present.
Yeah. That's horrible.
Well, then sometimes I think it's like the power of intentions and the power of your words, because I remember at my dad a birthday party for me the night before the accident. And it was my 27th birthday. And I just recorded a CD. We had sold almost all of them. It was the first time I had any like money at all to set back. Jeff Vaughn, the venue owner, gives me the guitar. Like, place was packed for my birthday. And I remember telling my friend, I was like, man, things are just too good. Something bad.
Wow.
And then the next day, you know. And I believe in that kind of, you know, the power of thought and the power of intentions. I'm a firm believer in that because what my experience has been in life. And there's part of me that thinks, you know, spoke that into existence. But I do think about it. It's like, it's almost like X or something with the guitar. I keep thinking because there's a spot on it where I dropped it. Like literally the night that he gave it to me, I dropped it on the corner. You know where you screw in like mic stands that have the tri base, not the round base, but the tri base?
Yeah, yeah.
They have the little thing that you screw in to tighten that part up. As soon as he gives me the guitar, dude, I strap the guitar on and I start playing. The strap came off and the bottom right by the input jack hit that little screw. And there was a little like indention in the guitar. And I just keep thinking, I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to walk into a pawn shop or a guitar center or something. And, you know, it's just going to be there.
Well, stolen guitars, lost guitars is a common thing. What was it? You telling me somebody said, or I read somewhere, a guy, one of his number one guitars, and he said it was stolen 3 times and he always got it back and he still had it. I'm reading that story. Maybe it was in Premier Guitar. I read so many articles, I don't remember who it was, but he said, yeah, this guitar has been stolen 3 times. Maybe it was the article had to do with the Black Keys, you know, Dan Auerbach, because there's a lot of press about them. My story is when I was living in Boston, I was getting ready. I was working for DuPont, not a music related thing, but I was getting ready to fly to Europe on a sales trip. I think I was going to be gone for 2 weeks and I was going to fly out. My plane was going to be leaving in about 2 or 3 hours. I was going to have to leave to get to the airport and fly out. And I went to the bank to get my traveler's checks or my cash or whatever it was. And I had left, my apartment was on the first floor and I'd left the window open. And as I was gone to the bank, probably half hour, and I came back, and as I put my key in, I heard something crash in my apartment. And as I opened the key and walked in, the burglar was just climbing out of the window that had been open. And then there was a patio fence that was about 6 feet high, and he was crawling over that. And without a thought, I'm wearing not a suit, but it was a blazer and khakis and a tie and a dress shirt. Because that's what I was wearing. That was what a salesman attire was, you know, khakis and a blazer, sports coat. Without a thought, thinking back on it now, I jumped through the window, jumped over the fence, started running after this guy. And I'm wearing my loafers. What I had back then, what I wore. And this guy's running down the alley, and I'm chasing him, and I'm gaining on him. And he runs for about 3 or 4 blocks, and I'm chasing him. My tie is, you know, going like this, and he makes a corner and he keeps looking back at me, and he gets in front of a very busy intersection, and he gets in the island in the middle of the intersection and he stops right there. There's people everywhere. And I come up to him and I kind of stop. I should have just, without stopping, just tackled him, but I didn't, because he stopped and looked at me. And he threw me a bag, which ended up being a bag with just a bunch of rags in it. He kept the bag with the stuff that he'd taken. He'd taken a few gold coins that I had, probably $200 worth of value, not a lot. I didn't know what he'd had at the time because I chased him out. And he said, if you come near me, I'll cut you. And I remember, I didn't see that he had a knife or not, but I'm sitting there thinking, this was the calculations going through my mind, kind of like the calculations that was going through your mind. I said, okay, He may have a knife or may not have a knife. If he does have a knife and he does cut me and I do go to the hospital, I'm probably going to miss my flight. And this trip to Europe is not going to go. I won't make the flight, and I'll have to explain to my boss that I didn't make it to Europe. Now, he may not have a knife, but the risk is too high.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't worried about getting hurt, which is interesting. I was just worried about the delay and getting blood on my, having to change my clothes. And right. I mean, it's just weird that I wasn't worried about getting hurt. I was worried about the possible delay if he actually did have a knife and what that would happen. And I remember, which was out of character, I was so angry because I couldn't pursue this because I had to literally go back and get in my car and go to the airport or taxi, whatever it was, and get on my flight because the time was running out. It took 2 hours to get to, you know, you had to leave early and traffic was horrible back then. I think since mm-hmm. built a tunnel or two to get to the airport, it was horrible back then. And I remember yelling at him. I said, if I ever see you again, I'm going to kill you. Don't ever go into my house. I'm like, thinking about why would you say you're going to kill him? You're not going to kill him. But I was angry. Anyway, so that's my story. I was thinking about that the other day. I was chasing this guy down the alley wearing my suit, basically.
And in those situations, like time stands still.
Like, yeah.
The thought process that happened of, you know, and you know, it's like that. When those endorphins are released and adrenaline's really, really high, that you go through these, this internal dialogue that if you weren't all amped up would probably take you 30 minutes to do. And you do it in a half a second.
Yeah. And the guy, he looked horrible. Looked like he hadn't showered. His clothes were horrible. I mean, he, you know, what kind of a person robs houses for a living? You know, I mean, you know, and the bag he threw me was a duffel or a backpack, and all it had was dirty kind of rags and stuff in it, or maybe clothes. And he had another bag that he kept that he didn't throw me, but I didn't know it when he threw it to me. Feel sorry for the guy. I mean, you know, he probably figured he just trolled houses that the windows were open, and assuming, because it was in the afternoon, it was like 3 in the afternoon, assuming that the people weren't home. And taking a risk, because if there was someone at home, you know, they could catch him. So he couldn't have been in my apartment very long because I wasn't at the bank very long. And he immediately went to the drawer in my bedroom, and I had, of course, some gold coins, and I think I don't remember even what else. So anyway, that's my story of being broken in. I remember the feeling. Put the lock and the key, and I hear something crash in my apartment and realize someone's in my apartment. And I quick open the door and burst in,
right,
climbing out the window.
just being robbed, man. I mean, just being stolen from.
Feeling. So those are the only two times that I've had someone broken in. But, you know, I prepared myself for it. So I have my studio. I have a door on my studio that I lock, and just out of habit, I lock it every time I leave. Because if they do get in my house, if somebody ever does break in, that's another barrier for them to get into my studio to steal my guitars, which are my valuable stuff. It's like a 2-inch thick door that they'd have to break through with a deadbolt, you know.
My father always had guns everywhere. He slept. This is a true story. Slept with a .357 under his pillow.
Oh my gosh!
Between his head and the back of his neck. Well, right when you walked in the door to his house, the front door was basically barricaded, and the front door led into his bedroom. The back door led into the kitchen, and right when you walked in. Kitchen into his back door, he had his old Marine Corps machete hanging on the wall right there in the kitchen. And I asked him one day, I'm like, well, Dad, as worried as you seem to be about somebody breaking in, why would you put a machete right by the entrance? If they come in unarmed, they're going to have the weapon in seconds. He said, well, I want to at least give him a chance. You're nuts, dude. Seriously. That was,
well,
dude. That was just how he was wired.
But you said he had special force. I mean, he experienced things that you probably never talked about.
He'd been through a lot, man. He really had. He had PTSD really bad. But I just always got tickled at some of the little things like that, you know, in his mindset. You'd be places and like a gun would fall out of his boot, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
It, even at like 78, you know, it's like, what do you think's going to happen, Dad? I don't know. Crazy.
What does your shirt say? Do not touch my tools, it says. Or my daughter. Do not touch my tools or my daughter. Nice.
I gave that to me.
Maddie. Maddie.
Yeah.
Is she 8 now or has she turned 9?
Hey, she's going to be 9 in August. So we shouldn't have to worry about that for some time.
For some time, yeah. So when they do come over to date her, are you going to grill her? Are you going to be one of those dads that just...
I've already got all that planned out, Tim. All I got to do is kill the first one. That should get around pretty quick. It's a small town. Once, by the time they find out and she decides to date again, I'll be out of prison. Everybody will know I'm serious.
Yeah, I would not want to be, I mean, I've, fathers who had daughters and sons said that they'd prefer 5 sons for every 1 daughter. I think teen. I don't think it is big of a deal as like under 10 or under, you know, preteen, but teenager, a lot more drama, whatever. And everybody's different, of course, but
everybody's different.
But in general, well, we've done our 40 minutes. Thank you so much for joining us, those of you that are listening, and those of you who are going to listen to us on the replays and even on the podcast. We get some pretty good streams on the podcast, and it's gone up recently, and we thank you for that. Hope you enjoy our content. And as always, we're willing to entertain any subjects that you want to propose to us. And we need to have more guests. We need to have Fedge back on here, too.
Let's have him soon.
What's that?
Let's have him on soon, next week.
Let's do that. I'll reach out to him. I talked to him today for a long time, so it was a good conversation. And, yeah, we'll do that. All right.
All right.
We'll see you next time. Jimmy D and the Wolf.